south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Yeah, you're going to like this show today. We're going to get extremely un-PC if we get to that topic. I think we will. But first, here's a topic that might seem a little lightweight at first, but believe me, once you're down here and you see it for yourself, you're going to be glad I mentioned it. What kicked this off was an email I got from a repeat offender, James, who's living here in Central America permanently now. Extremely happy camper, as he said to me last time I spoke with him. Though, like all newcomers to Latin America, he's got a few complaints and gripes. Anyway, he writes, Johnny, do you know of any big man clothing stores? Seems like everything's for pint-sized humans here. For example, I bought what I thought would have been a good-fitting t-shirt, an extra large, only to find it fits me like a size smaller, a large. All right, it's me, Johnny, again. Hey, I've had a number of emails like that over the years, and I never thought to bring it up in this show, but the thing is, most expats and gringos coming down are supersized compared to Latin Americans, sometimes both vertically and horizontally. What with the average Latin guy around 5'4", and the average American 5'9 or 10. Of course, we're talking about guys now, but the same basic height disparity exists with American gringas and Latinas. On average, there's a good 4, 5, even 6-inch height difference. So, of course, all the clothing stores here in Latin America cater to the local population, meaning mostly smaller than you and I are. But a secondary problem exists, as Jim points out. In almost every situation, when you go into a clothing store, whatever you pick off the rack, it will be a size smaller than the one listed. So for guys anyway, a medium will be a small, a large will be a medium, an extra large, a large. Not good and often frustrating. A pain in the bumpies, as they say down here. That means that unless you know that fact, you can't just walk into a store, pick out a large, and go home with it. Here in Latin America, the number one clothing tip is you have to try on everything first. Except, of course, the stuff they won't let you try on, like underwear for women, lingerie, and some of the sexier stuff. Though you might be surprised, some of the intimate stuff for women that they'll never let you try on up in the States, you just have to buy it as is. More times than not, they'll let you try it on down here. I don't know if that's good or bad. Probably not so good for hygienic reasons, who knows. Now, you will notice, I guess it's the same up in the States, when you look at the tag on a shirt or pants, especially pants, even shoes, they'll have European sizes, US sizes, and get this, Mexican sizes. Don't ask me why. As if Mexicans might be a breed of their own. Maybe they are, who knows. So both guys and gals, don't be fooled by extra small, small, medium, large, and extra large. They're almost never on the button, except for shoe sizes. They're on the button. But you're still going to try them before you buy them. That's a given. So do remember, especially if you're buying something for someone else, like a present. Generally, medium's a small, large is a medium, extra large is a large. And since so many American gringos and expats down here are supersized, not necessarily in a horizontal way, though there's some of that too. We're just generally all around bigger, and that goes for the condom department as well. A topic we'll touch on, wrong choice of words there, in a future show, I promise. Though as far as clothing, that means a lot of us guys will be looking for the double X or triple X in shirts and coats, etc. Because I repeat, a double X, which they call a doble X. You've heard of Dos Equis beer, right? That's just double X beer. So, unfortunately, down here, a double X shirt is an extra large, and a triple X, or triple X, is a double X in the sizes we're accustomed to. But the problem is, down here, you almost never find a double or triple X of anything. Come on, why would a clothing store stock a double or triple X when 99% of Latin guys do not come in those sizes? And even with that obesity epidemic that's hitting here in Latin America, too, what that means is you've got a lot of short, little obese guys running around. And their apparel of choice? A large t-shirt and jeans. By the way, the only clothing items besides shoes that you can really count on being the size stated on the label would be t-shirts and sweatshirts with English sayings on them. So why might that be? Well, that's because probably 70 to 80% of all the t-shirts that end up being sold in the States with English gringo sayings on them, of course, are produced down here in Latin America. That means the clothing manufacturers here have to maintain gringo standard sizes. So if you're in a store here in Latin America and you see a t-shirt or a sweatshirt that says Boston Red Sox on it, you can be sure if it's a large, it's a real gringo large. Because the vast majority of those t-shirts and sweatshirts are shipped up to the States and sold in U.S. stores to supersized gringos. Makes sense, right? Which is why you see so many obese little Latin guys, that's an oxymoron, right? Wearing t-shirts with English gringo sayings on them. Because as strange as it sounds, a t-shirt with an English saying on it that's a large is an extra large for a Latin person. And I have to say, after being down here so long, I still haven't come across one big and tall man's shop. I know you can find them everywhere up in the States, but down here, that's a niche that has not been tapped yet. And I think for any enterprising gringo who's into doing a brick and mortar thing, that could be a very lucrative business in any medium or large Latin city. And on that subject, here's something I haven't mentioned yet, though I've got a few emails from gringo listeners living up in Mexico who mentioned the very same thing. They said, Mexico is just filled with extremely obese Latinos, both male and female. And in general, as you move through Mexico, south through Central America to Panama and South America, there's less and less obesity. And strangely enough, as you move south, the Latino population is slightly shorter. In other words, the Mexicans are the tallest and the fattest of the Latinos. So why is that? It's been postulated that maybe after popping in and out of the States so much, picking up our bad and our good habits, along the way they picked up some good neonatal nutritional knowledge. Now, notwithstanding today's U.S. junk food and GMO diet, it's claimed that the American diet, at least in the past anyway, accounted for the increase in stature that comes with being a North American. And there's proof that that happens with every third world group that moves into the States. The following generations are taller than their parents. Certainly you can see the same effect with other first world countries too. Same thing with Northern Europe, Japan, South Korea, and Australia. There, the pregnant mother and the kids get more vitamins and minerals and a better and more consistent diet in general. Now, whether that will continue in the future is doubtful, considering most all first world kids are addicted to Coca-Cola, French fries, and Happy Meals. Aside from that, historically speaking, the children of immigrants in first world countries are almost always a bit taller than their parents. Oh, and by the way, the British have put out a number of studies showing that the people in India who get free passage to the UK because it was a former British colony, once they've moved from India to the UK, the next two generations are taller than their parents as well. Couldn't be the fish and chips, mushy peas, bangers, and shepherd's pie. That stuff's lethal. Gotta be something else. But back to this clothing selection problem gringos and gringas have once they get down here, and it's no small thing. That's not to say they haven't got a ton of custom tailoring shops here that can just about do any kind of adjustments when it comes to clothing. Remember, half the world's clothing and textiles come from Latin America, so they really know how to work with that stuff. Not to mention, there's a ton of custom tailor shops that'll make you a suit in a day or two. Not as cheap as in Hong Kong, but pretty close and just as good. But, you know, who wants to go through all that? Especially guys, we just want to go into a store, pick something off the shelf, try it on, and head on out. Now, here's one good solution. You know, here in Latin America, there's a huge industry called the paca industry. That's P-A-C-A. And if you go into a paca store or market, and they're everywhere except in upper middle class and wealthy areas. Why? Well, we'll get to that in a minute. So these paca places are regular stores. However, not only are they nothing special, the ones in the lower class neighborhoods are hole-in-the-wall dumps. Spiders, dogs, driveway chickens and all. You'll find them in middle class neighborhoods too. Latin middle class, by the way, is kind of white trash, North American style. You knew that already, right? Now, these places are known by the common word paca, but they aren't always advertised like that. Because using the word paca insinuates that all the clothes are used. And it's true, maybe 70% of the clothes you find there are used. But the other 30% are new. So it's true, most of the stuff in a paca is used. Which is why you'll never see upper middle class or wealthy Latinos shopping at these stores. Because, just like in the States, before vintage became cool, to buy used clothing in a place like Salvation Army or Goodwill, or even walking into such a place, except, of course, around Halloween, then you could be putting together a costume, right? Otherwise, any other time of the year, it would say a lot about you and your family's socioeconomic condition. Well, if you're old enough to remember way back when, in the 60s and 70s, before the word vintage was even coined, people would judge you if you walked into Salvation Army or Goodwill, thinking you were poor or on the edge, even feeling sorry for you because you couldn't shop at Sears or Monkey Ward's. So in a way, even back then in the States, it was all about the show. And because of extreme lag time, it's like that here in Latin America, too. Upper middle class and wealthy Latins wouldn't be caught dead in a paca store. Unless, again, they were scouting for costumes for Halloween. Which, by the way, is a pure gringo wannabe thing, too, because Halloween really did not exist down here even 10 or 15 years ago. I remember well when I first came down, even in Costa Rica, which back then was the most highly saturated gringo area in Latin America, though it was a fraction of the gringos they have there today. Anyway, back then, there was no sign of any Halloween celebrations amongst the locals. In fact, I remember there were more than a few Spanish op-ed pieces claiming that Halloween was the devil's holiday. So back then, there were no pumpkins, witches, trick-or-treat, no Halloween costume parties, except in a very few, upscale hotels in Costa Rica loaded with gringos. And as far as the guy on the street, back then, the average Latino didn't even know what Halloween was. And now, well, every Latin country is as crazy about Halloween as the North Americans are. But where were we? Oh, yeah. Pacas and why you should check them out. Well, you know, Americans up in the States overbuy everything, right? We all have our big closets just full of clothing that doesn't fit us anymore. We might have only worn this stuff once or twice, especially if you're the average American with the ever-expanding waistline. Now, most of us have that impossible dream that one day we'll fit into those clothes we bought 5 or 10 years ago. But comes a time, they call it spring cleaning up in the States, where you finally decide, or someone decides for you, that half your closet's going to Goodwill. Salvation Army or St. Vincent de Paul, whatever. That's how I lost my very valuable DC comic book collection and my Mars Attacks cards. Thanks, Mom. So most of your clothes and your toy donations end up in pacas down here in Latin America. Now, a long time ago on an Expat File show, I did an expose on how those clothes, toys, and knick-knack donations you think are given away to the poor and needy down here are actually sold by weight in giant bundles to paca stores. They unpack the bundles, try to display them nicely in the store, and in turn, sell them piece by piece. So they're actually sold twice before they ever get to the poor and needy. And the people who benefit from that, the people making the money, doing the sorting, organizing the whole operation, well, scumbag Latin politicians and odoriferous bureaucrats, of course. So remember, next time your nice leather jacket is bursting at the seam because you've had too many tacos, Happy Meals, and Krispy Kremes, when you drop it into that Goodwill box, it's going to get sold, not donated. If it's fake leather, it'll probably sell for around $10, and real leather, $25. And you know, when you get down here and you see those things for sale, it kind of chips away at your faith in humanity. So much for that old saying, it's better to give than receive, which is why some people say it's better not to know. Well, there it is. Call me a killjoy if you want. Hey, that's life, man. Personally, I'd rather know than not know, wouldn't you? So anyway, you'll see these paca outlets everywhere. And sometimes there'll be some very cool, high-end, brand-name stuff, and you'll say, how'd that get in a paca? Well, you know, people with dough end up throwing their brand-name, high-end stuff out, too. So bottom line, when you're in one of these paca stores, you'll see stuff that's definitely used and stuff that looks absolutely brand-new because it is. Wait a minute. How's that happen? Well, it's like this. Since there are so many hundreds of clothing manufacturers here in Latin America that make all the stuff that goes up to the States, well, as it turns out, with every clothing run, be it sweatshirts, t-shirts, jackets, jeans, whatever, there'll be a 3, 5, or even 10% overrun. More than one maquila owner has told me, if a color is a little off, if it's too red or not blue enough, the buyer might reject it, and what do you do with that stuff? And sometimes the buyer who put 50% down will go bankrupt or halt an order. For example, if there's some kind of a sports playoff or Olympics and a team drops out early, they'll have tons of extra t-shirts, sweatshirts, jackets, whatever, with a loser sports club logo on it. Not to mention, sometimes things are misspelled or a letter's missing. So there might be a couple of thousand extras. Where do they go? To the pacas, which is why you'll find new stuff there too. Not to mention all that practically new stuff many picky, demanding gringas and gringos give away. You know, presents they got for Christmas. They didn't like the color, didn't like the fit, feel, form, whatever. That stuff will sit in the closet who knows how long until it gets transferred to a Goodwill bin. Which is why pacas are the best source for big and tall gringos that are looking to get outfitted. Because most of that stuff's coming directly from Gringoland. And as far as pricing, almost anything you get in a paca is going to be half or much less than half of what you'd pay for a new one in a store. In fact, about a year and a half ago, I was checking out one of those parkas. It was a huge parka, and I stumbled into a whole section of leather jackets. Some of them fake. In fact, most of them fake, but there were a few real ones in there, along with a beautiful black Pierre Cardin leather. That's right. Brand new. Still had a tag on it. It was a large, obviously from the States, meaning for Latinos it was an extra large, which is why it probably hadn't been snapped up. They wanted $50 for it because someone there knew it was real leather and high quality. I got them down to $35. Hey, this is Latin America, so you can haggle. By the way, speaking of vintage and resale shops, it's a funny thing, you know, they're only starting to pop up now. And as you might guess, only in gringoized and tourist areas. Because you see, if you mentioned the words vintage or retro to the average Latino, they wouldn't know what the hell you were talking about. However, Latinos that go to helicopter high schools and universities, they know all about vintage and retro, being that their parents have dough and they're supreme gringo wannabes. Which is why if you have a chance to visit a Latin university, you'll notice some of the kids are into the retro, hippie, and goth thing. And where do you think they get those clothes? So by all means, you big and tall and wide gringos, hit those pacas. But do skip the lower class pacas in the crappy neighborhoods. Oh, and by the way, in pacas you'll find all the high-end brand names too. Not the clones and knockoffs. I'm talking about the real thing. Like, for example, that Pierre Cardin leather jacket. I'm sure something like that in the States would go $600 or $700. All right, now I'm going to read another email from Mr. G this time, and it kind of touches on a sore point with me. He says, "Hey, Johnny, I got back last November from a trip to Guatemala. When I was there, I talked to a gal who was in her 50s, a native Guatemalan. She's upper middle class by Latin standards. She's traveled a fair amount, including working in a law office in the U.S. She's built a house in San Pedro La Laguna, rents out a guest house, and made it her permanent home. Her perspective is that Guatemala is on a path that Mexico has been on for a long time, rapidly increasing crime, gangs, mafia, and cartel-type events, with the majority of people impoverished and staying that way. So my question, Johnny, is there actually much starvation happening in Guatemala? I know they are now eating a lot of toxic American junk food, which is a form of starvation, and you get fatter and sicker. I also saw a fair amount of seemingly homeless indigenous people sleeping next to buildings in Antigua, mostly. Would you say that's fairly common these days? Also, do you think that laundromats are so expensive that the indigenous can't afford to wash their clothes, or do they actually prefer to use the streams and lakes for washing? I also noticed that the indigenous people were very friendly and radiate very good vibes. I also noticed how unfriendly and self-absorbed a lot of the expats and gringo tourists are. Last question, seeing as you like the Lake Atitlan area a lot, what town or outside of town area is your favorite? Now, please don't broadcast that on the show. Wouldn't want to ruin some great spots and hidden gems with a new influx of gringos." Then he finishes off, "Thanks for the great shows, the info, and a lot of laughs." All right, let's get to these things one at a time. First of all, he's talking about a native Guatemalan, upper middle class, English-speaking lady. I know the type. Worked for a law firm in the U.S. Man, I avoid those people like the plague. However, when you first get down here and your Spanish sucks, those are some of the people you're going to meet and probably hang with. And eventually, if you're down here long enough, you'll see the vast majority of upper middle class and wealthy people are classists and racists. Well, I can tell you, there's nothing worse than to meet upper middle class and rich Latins who go back and forth to the States, especially ones who've been there a while. They really do want to impress on you that they're practically gringos. And as much as they believe that or want you to believe it, they ain't. But they will make a hell of a show, and they're constantly on trying to prove their superiority to their fellow Latins who didn't have rich parents to send them off to the States to get educated or to go to my jammy occasionally just to shop. And when they come back, for whatever reason, sometimes it's because up in the States, their ego is deflated because they get no preferential treatment at all. They find out soon enough their family name and or money does not mean shit. So while in the States, they get no free passes to the front of the line, not like they do when they're living in their own country. In the States, they're just foreigners with an accent, nothing special at all. I can tell you this, I've seen it 100 times. Latinos who've lived in the States for a while, once with money, often send their children to U.S. universities to get degrees, yet they return to their home country, sometimes permanently, because they don't get a leg up because of their family name or daddy's social position. In Latin America, they have a word for it. Cuello, a combination of nepotism, cronyism, favoritism, whatever you want to call it. Soon enough, they find out in the States it's a level playing field and you have to start at the bottom. And to get ahead, you have to prove yourself. And down here, if you're wealthy and high placed, it just doesn't work that way. So what about that strict class system they have down here? Well, it starts with the fact that for the Latin lower and middle classes, there's this great morbid obsession to look upon anyone who lives in a nice neighborhood, who has a nice car, or as they like to say, alta clase con dinero, that means high class with money. So the lower classes here put those people on a pedestal that they absolutely do not deserve. Which is why upper middle class and wealthy Latins are always dropping names and putting on the dog. Even when all their credit cards are maxed out and they're 2 months behind in paying their bodyguards. I'm telling you, those people make me sick. I've known so many of them over the years, and they just love to invite a real blue-eyed gringo to one of their parties. In fact, just the other day, Captain Mago was telling me that's been happening to him, too. Oh, and I admit, I went to a lot of them when I first came down. And you know, it's kind of like the George Bush Jr. effect. It's amazing how many children of the rich have IQs of at least 80. So anyway, in the email I just read, we have this upper-middle-class Latina telling our gringo friend what I hear from a lot of upper-class Latinos. Doesn't matter what Latin country they're from, they'll tell you their country's going to the dogs. It's getting like Mexico. Oh, and that's why they're going to send their kids to a university in the States, not in Latin America. And then, of course, the pattern will repeat. The parents will drop 200 grand so their kid can graduate from Texas A&M. Foreigners and out-of-staters, of course, pay double tuition. And even if he has a Bush Jr. room temperature IQ, he'll probably graduate, but just barely, because the school is counting on a certain amount of foreign students for that double tuition. Then, if he hasn't been held over for a couple of years, which the school would love, surprise, surprise, he'll walk out with a useless business, psychology, or marketing degree, which will qualify him for practically no good job up in the States. So he'll be a nobody in Texas, maybe less than a nobody, but he'll have that diploma, which is a hugely important thing down in Latin America. But you see, if he stays up in the States, and I've heard this from a number of people now, even though he loves everything about it, he feels a little empty and out of place there. Why? Because he was brought up at the top of the heap in a class-based society. He misses those maids and nannies picking up after him, and those drivers, bodyguards, and the common Latin people sucking up and deferring to him, which is why so many of these entitled kids end up coming back down. After all, mommy and daddy have a country house, a beach house, a city house, and maybe even a house in my jammy, including maids, gardeners, and the works. So in the end, when you talk about crime, if you were a criminal, who would you rob? Who would you extort? Why, the gringo wannabe crowd, of course, those entitled rich and upper middle class show-offs. And isn't it funny, you meet a lot of world-traveling gringos and expats who are extremely wealthy, and somehow you just can't pick up on it, not at all. It's sort of a given that the more well-traveled you are, the more low-key you are, and the more you blend in with the locals. And isn't it funny, when you run into gringos here in Latin America who have nice, thriving businesses, they do not have personal drivers or bodyguards. Oh, and one more thing about other Latin countries like Guatemala going the way of Mexico. Crime-wise, of course. Well, then how do you explain, as mentioned in the show just a week or so ago, that the homicide rate in Guatemala, in Salvador, and Honduras have decreased by 50% over the last year or two. 50%. Go ahead, look it up. So, Mr. G, I admit you touched a nerve with that one. I tell you, 90% of upscale Latins have rubbed me the wrong way. Always trying to speak to you in English. Always dropping gringo names in places, trying to impress you that they're almost gringos themselves. Makes me cringe when they say, Johnny, I just love the United States. Oh, I'll let them roll for a while, and sometimes to amuse myself, I'll say, you know what? You couldn't pay me to go back there. And every American who's got a half a brain knows why. Hey, you want to see a priceless look on someone's face? Try laying that on a Latin person who's just done some gushing about the U.S. Oh, and Mr. G, about the homeless situation. Well, you see homeless people all over. Around the tourist areas. Why? Because gringos are soft touches. Oh, that's not to say you won't see homeless people in the rest of Latin America. Yeah, they're here and there. In the scruffier areas of the big cities mostly, but not many of them. But on the gringo tourist trail, well, let me ask you this. If you were homeless, would you rather be homeless in a poor, scruffy section of town? Or in a nice, upscale tourist area where people hand out dollars instead of the local funny money? All right, and then Mr. G mentions a bit about how indigenous people wash their clothes. Now, there's something most people don't know. Laundromats did not arrive down here till the gringos came down in hordes, which is why nearly all the laundromats are on the gringo tourist trail. Fact is, for the really poor people here in Latin America, that's probably 20 or 30% of the population, they've always washed their clothes in streams or lakes or public wash areas near the town square. And middle-class Latinos have always washed their clothes by hand in an outdoor basin called a pila. And it's only been for the last 20 years or so that middle-class Latins have had automatic washing machines. And in many cases, maybe half of those cases, the washing machine doesn't even work. So even a lot of middle-class Latin families do their washing in the pila, by hand. Then you've got the 5% at the top, the upper middle class and wealthy Latinos, they've all got washing machines. So in the end, it's not the fact that indigenous people can't afford to go to a laundromat, it's just that it's not part of their culture. In fact, I had a few indigenous maids myself who preferred to wash clothes in the pila. Of course, I had a washing machine, but they were afraid to use it, figuring they'd screw something up. And if you don't train them right and give them the proper instructions slowly, they will. So they prefer the pila, even though it's more work and takes a lot longer. Oh, and finally, you remember Mr. G says in his email, he noticed how the indigenous people were very friendly and radiated good vibes. And you know he's absolutely right about that. And yes, Mr. G, I agree when you say that many gringos and expats are self-absorbed dickheads. So are you wondering why I don't live on the gringo tourist trail? I know a lot of people who come down, especially the ones that don't speak Spanish, say they need an occasional gringo fix. Hey, when I first got down, I needed a little bit of that too. However, you'll find you need it less and less as you conquer the language barrier. And finally, Mr. G says, seeing as you like Lake Atitlan so much, remember that's the most beautiful lake in the world, and there are at least 12 little lakeside towns nestled around it, he'd like to know which is my favorite. Well, Mr. G, I'm not gonna tell you, not on the air, not in this podcast, but I will tell you if you come down to my Expat Insider Seminar. How do you like that segue? That said, unless somebody presses the reset button up in the first world, and that could happen, you know, my next Expat Insider Seminar will be in July 2018. So, if you want to get on the early bird waiting list, find out about the discounts and the details before everyone else, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Just put the word seminar in the subject box, and I'll put you on that list and shoot you an email as soon as the details come in. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, you can schedule a one-on-one phone call with me. But first, download my free Plan B questionnaire at www.thenewexpat.com. Better yet, if you want to get your Plan B going from right up there in the States, just sign up for my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. Get the perfect Plan B blueprint by going to theexpatfiles.com/academy. Nos vemos.